This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
We'll have Triple H coming up a little bit later on this hour, get into some SummerSlam stuff and obviously many other things.
Yeah, and listen, I like him. I've always liked him, and I've always respected him. Even more respect for Recco.
Because of his poster choice.
We just found that. Now, he doesn't know who Triple H is.
Yeah,
which
we're talking about Triple H here. He's like, who?
Yeah, he legitimately never heard of the guy, which is insane. Yeah. But he did have a Miss Elizabeth poster on his wall as a kid. That is, I know. Listen, I would have had one, too. I don't think I ever saw one to purchase.
I had one as an adult a couple years ago. I went back and bought one, but then I did sell it, unfortunately.
Did you really?
Money. Yeah, but I was going back collecting all these old things that I had.
It was like a full-size poster or a little tiny picture?
Do you remember the WWF magazines?
Oh, yeah. I used to get those all the time.
Right. So in the magazine, they would have the catalogs and the posters from the catalogs.
That's right.
Yeah, those, like Miss Elizabeth, the one I had, she was like working out. She had like the dumbbell and
a
workout
gear. Not a sequin dress.
She
had more like the 1980s spandex.
There was one that I had with her and Macho, where she was wearing like the white dress and Macho
the high heels, the sequins, the earrings.
Sold those, yeah.
She was the best.
Had I known Recco loved them, I would have brought them in for Jerry. You could have had
bring it in for me.
BT and Sal, the fans, will have some fun with Triple H coming up a little bit later on. We'll get to the Mets, too. Really, I mean, the only thing to me from last night, it was a bad loss, whatever it happened. Not a bad loss, just a loss, a bad game for them. Bullpen imploded. But the Soto thing, where Soto fouled the ball off his foot, it seems like everything's okay day to day. I wouldn't be shocked if he weren't in the lineup today. They'd be playing at 4 o'clock, so I'm assuming we'll have the lineup before we leave the air at 2. But that's the only thing really to monitor here. Hopefully the Mets can get a win and avoid getting swept. Clay Holmes goes for them today. But look, it's been a rough series in San Diego. Great first game that they ended up losing. Yesterday they get beat up pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Padres are good. And, you know, the Mets just didn't play a great crisp game last night. It's not a big deal here. I think I have a feeling that Soto's going to talk his way into the lineup. He's just that he wants to play every day.
Yeah.
And it does seem like they probably, I don't want to overstep bounds, you never know, but probably avoided disaster with that. Usually usually for a lefty, you foul it off your front shin or your foot. Very rare that you actually get the back foot. So that was just a weird angle, and that's just bad luck right there, although it might be good luck in the end. But I do think two things jump out. Again, it's not a surprise, although when I saw this stat, it's not about Soto. I want to run this by you here. Since June 13th, so basically it's August 1st, since June 13th, Lindor and Alonso. Now, I know this is a bit of an antiquated stat, but it's got to still mean something. Lindor and Alonso had the two lowest batting averages in the National League.
Yeah.
It's a long chunk of baseball.
Lindor's in a major funk. What's Pete hitting on the year right now? You have his numbers?
Let me see. I did a bunch of numbers crunching. Let's see.
No.
So, you know, I love the numbers here. So that's why I don't want to give up Schlittler. His numbers are favorable. All right, so we'll get back to the calls, obviously. BT and Sal. Lindor, I went back to June 7th for Lindor, and I do have the numbers, yes.
He's in 261 now.
I got that, but I want to contrast. I want to just show you the swoon here. So June 7th, Lindor was at 289.
Right.
And he was at 858 OPS. Now he's at 248 with an OPS of 748. He's lost 110 points. I know he's been hurt with the toe. 110 points on the OPS, so that is a massive swoon. And now Pete was at, and we knew he wasn't going to hit 296. He's never been that hitter, but he was hitting 296 on June 13th.
Right.
And his OPS was 966. He's down to 261, and the OPS has dropped 120 points. Both of those guys are falling like rocks.
Yeah, and been out of the MVP race. Remember, it was MVP and all that stuff, which we expected Pete to come down a little bit. I mean, this type of drop in that short a time frame, you know what I was thinking about? June 13th, dude. That was a Friday the 13th. And that's the date that goes back to where the Yankees have had the, you know, going into
the Red Sox.
Yeah. The fifth worst record in baseball, whatever it was since June 13th, both these teams. Remember, that was the day. Remember, we were talking about, like, hey, it's never been better. Mets and Yankees on the high end. I think Evan and Tiki and Sean or whatever were talking about who's more likely to win the World Series, whatever it was.
I'm sure we were all jumping into that conversation.
But since that day, and now you can trace it back to that Friday, the damn 13th, it was, in fact, bad luck for both these teams with Alonso and Lindor dipping with their average and obviously the Yankees. I still think the Mets will be okay. And obviously right now the focal point is going to be what these teams are going to add here. So we talked about it from a Yankee perspective. I think the Mets are going to be, and there was a report, I guess, that Jeff Passan or Buster Olney, I forget, I heard it on the morning show talking about it, where Fleegs mentioned it, actually, that the Mets, they expect the Mets to be one of the more aggressive teams, and I expect that to be the case, whether it's two relievers and a starter, whether it's two relievers and a center fielder, whether it's maybe a mix of all three. I think the Mets are going to go big here, as they should, ahead of tomorrow's 6 p.m. trade deadline.
I think Boomer and Jr., I didn't hear this part, but I think somebody was saying it. So they were coming up with over-unders, total moves here. What's your over-under for the Mets in terms of moves? And then I'm going to get the Yankees.
So, like, meaning from right now
from
on.
From right now.
How many trades they make?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go, what's my, what I'm gonna set the number?
I'll set the number. You tell me which way you're going. Over, under, 2.5.
I go over. I was going to set it at 3.
Wow.
I'm going over. I think they make moves, man. I think they're making moves. There's too much smoke there.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're making moves. Now, I mean, there's a thought. Remember, Lau came up yesterday. We brought that name up. It was being reported that the Mets were interested in Lau.
Now, by the way, I think you were right. I think it's Lau. Was saying it was Lau.
It is Lau.
Because they said Lau on the game last night. I'm like, what?
There might be another Lau, but I'm pretty sure it was
there
Lau.
There are two guys.
I trust SNY. And before we did the show last night, I'm like, which one is it?
Oh, so I was right. Yesterday
it's
I was
Lau.
Right. That's what I thought.
Yes, okay.
But then I heard Lau last night.
Yeah, I know. The whole thing. It just drives me nuts because it reads Lau, but it's really Lau. Anyway, Lau, if they were to get him, I think that could be getting him and then trading, let's say, McNeil or whatever, and also getting Robert. I don't know if they would get Lau would be the one move and not a center fielder. I think they're going to get a center fielder and potentially Lau, and then obviously bullpen arms. There's also the idea that they could get a starter as well. Now, maybe one trade can bring back a starter and a reliever. Maybe one trade could bring back Robert and a reliever. I don't know, but I'm going to say that the Mets make 3 moves.
Okay. That's a pretty healthy number. Yeah. I think that's nuts, by the way. I mean, so, all right, so 3 for the Mets. I might go on. I'd like to throw that half in there because otherwise you have a lot of pushes. If I was to attach a half of a trade to that, I would probably be more inclined to go 2.5 rather than the over for 3.5, which is 4. That's a lot of trades, possible.
2.5, you take the under? You think they make 2?
2.5, I'd probably take the over. I'd probably go 3. I just wouldn't go 4.
Yeah.
Now, for the Yankees, keep in mind, the Yankees already have brought in 2 guys.
Right.
One of which is they're starting third baseman.
That's why, man, it could even be more than 3. And for the Yanks, what? They're going to make at least 2.
Well, I know that Martino's been reporting a lot of stuff, and a few others had. I saw yesterday a couple times there where Cashman, thinks that it's not off the table where they go out there and they get 2 starters and 3 relievers.
Yeah.
Now, which I don't think is going to, that seems incredibly ambitious. If they did that, I'm not saying we wouldn't appreciate it, and I'm not saying that it's not necessarily necessary, but if they get 5 new guys by tomorrow, coupled with the 2 that they brought in, 7 moves?
Yeah, I mean,
7?
Hey, if the situation calls for it, that's what I'm saying, with the Mets, 3 might be light. Hey, if it depends on how many players you could bring back with 1 move. We know that each team needs multiple additions. So you have a trade here, huh?
We got a little trade alert.
Ah, yeah, the Yankees have acquired Austin Slater from the Chicago White Sox.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Okay, who the hell is Austin Slater?
He's an outfielder.
What does that mean? They got an outfielder?
Yeah.
Is he a right-handed bat, I'm assuming?
Yes, he's a right-handed bat.
He's got to be a righty stick.
I think he was with the Giants for a little bit. He floated around.
Austin Slater.
Okay, yeah, Austin Slater. Got it up here. He's hitting .236. Let's see. Does he lead really good strikeouts? He'll fit right in.
There it is.
No, he actually doesn't have that many strikeouts. But he hasn't played that many games.
Let's see.
He's hitting. Where is he at here?
He's with the Giants that long, huh?
That should have been a bad news in a good way, right?
Dude, this is not even worth interrupting our segment.
What did they get? I mean, his WAR is 0.3. I mean, what did they give up?
Is it 721 OPS? Cash?
One of those Yankee Cowboy hats that they have coming up for a giveaway?
No, you like
the
this move.
What the hell did they
give
up?
This move. They get to keep Dominguez, Spencer Jones, and Schlittler. I mean, this is what you get when you don't have to give up the guys.
But is he
Why go get Kwan when you could get Austin Slater?
Is he going to actually play?
Is he related to Christian Slater?
Hold on. Let me just...
Christian Slater and Austin Slater going for lunch.
You guys can have fun.
Outfielder, pinch hitter, first baseman. Yeah. Maybe he's some insurance for goal.
Yeah, great. Let me at least go to Savant to see what he does well.
Austin?
All right?
Yeah.
All right. So he's got a good arm.
I'm a baseball reference. I'll answer it for you. Nothing.
Well, he's in the... Well, the red does mean something for me. So on the Savant, he's got
can
an
he spin 80, it?
Are you guys done having fun here?
Okay, go ahead.
Is there you can spin it? Here it is. Yeah, I tell you guys.
Go ahead,
I hope you get no moves tomorrow. The arm strength is 88%. So he's got a good arm. I mean, what are we doing here? He's not going to play, dude. I mean, what is this?
Why'd they get
him? I don't know. Is it a precursor to getting ready to move? No, here's the serious question. This is the serious matter. Are they getting ready to trade a Dominguez, in all seriousness,
or Goldschmidt,
a Dominguez or a Grisham or a Jones, and they just need another capable, decent outfielder with a good arm? Not to play every day. I don't know the answer to that. There's no way that this is the move that the Yanks are making.
He had 34 ribbies in 2022 in 125 games.
Hey, he's got more than Vientos. Take it easy,
guys.
I mean, come on.
You're a big steals guy. He did have a stolen base this year, so he could run a little bit.
Is he at least one for one, or is he one for four?
He's one for one.
He's got good instincts. He's not going to play. We can mock this all day. I can promise you he's not going to be leading off tonight and playing left field.
Maybe it's something. Maybe they acquired him to have him play AAA, and then Spencer Jones, you need some bodies. Spencer Jones come up.
You never know. I want them to call up Spencer Jones. We've wasted enough time on this. When there's a meaningful trade,
yeah,
please
Hoff,
alert
come
us.
Come on, man.
He's just doing his job.
He gave me
he's
a little sports semi
job.
There. He goes, "Oh, we got a trade alert."
And you never know. I know. I felt a little movement myself.
Yeah, and then Austin's. Talk about a letdown. All right, BT and Sal, the fan. Sal is calling from Brooklyn. What's up, Sal?
What's going on, boys? Good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, real quick, if the Yankees came in looking to be another World Series team, so how good a job is Cashman doing if they still need 5, 6, 7, 8 trades?
He's doing a bad job.
Exactly.
We've told you this for years.
No, I've been saying the same thing, brother. Believe me, we're on the same page. We're fans. And you watch a ground ball to Volpe, what's your first instinct? My God, he's not going to catch it. He's not going to throw it right. You're biting your nails. I mean, we can like a kid as much as you can like him, but your eyes don't lie, man. Okay, he came up in New York. We like the kid. He's not the guy. And I'm not saying throw him away. The Yankees did no justice with him. Leave him in the nine hole because they always put him in positions for RBIs. He's not an RBI guy.
Yep.
He's supposed to be up here for steals, and he never does a crossover on a steal. It's always a bunny hop. Fundamentals are nowhere with this kid as much as he was supposed to be this fundamentalist. So that's on the Yankees for not developing this kid the right way. And last but not least, BT.
Yeah.
Kwan, man. I know Schlittler showed you something in a half a game, and I know I'm teasing three games he played.
Yep.
You don't want, you're worried about Schlittler or Jones when you can get proven for something unproven?
Well,
you got to give something up to get something back, and what you're getting back will help this team a lot more than waiting to see what you're giving up, where they're going to develop in 2-3 years.
I understand.
Make the move, man.
Listen, I like Kwan. How many times I got to tell you guys this? I really like him. But he ain't Ricky Henderson coming with 75 steals.
Nobody's better than anything you have.
I understand that, but I just need to make sure. All I'm saying is I want to know what I'm giving up. I'm not going to blindly say, take whatever you want for Steven Kwan.
Right, but
if it's Ramirez and Kwan, I'll say, take Jones, take Dominguez, and take Schlittler.
Right, understood.
That's all I'm saying.
But if I gave you the hypothetical of Schlittler and, say, Spencer Jones or Dominguez.
For Kwan?
Yeah, you would
too
not
much.
Do
I would not do that right
See,
now.
See, I would do it in a
I got
heartbeat.
You. I wouldn't do it
Good
right
God,
now. Too much.
Man, I hope that the Yankees do. Now, I don't think that they will.
I don't think so either.
I don't think they have the guts to do it. I don't know if it's about the intelligence or the guts or what. I don't think the Yankees operate like that. And then this is what you get from the Yankees. Now we're going to ride it out with Volpe. We'll ride it out with Dominguez. Ride it out with Spencer Jones and this guy and that guy. They haven't had a leadoff hitter in how long? Like, it's almost like you would think the New York Yankees could figure out a way to get a leadoff hitter. You know who their leadoff hitter has been the last few years? DJ LeMahieu. They're going into the last few years, when we, little old us, and what do we know? We're just loud mouths on the radio. We would say, God, DJ LeMahieu's washed up. You're going into the season trying to win a World Series with him as your leadoff hitter? And then, of course, they have to move on from LeMahieu eventually. Why not go get a leadoff hitter who could actually hit close to 300, play Gold Glove caliber defense, instead of putzing around with some of these younger guys?
Putzing around.
I mean, I'm trying to get the Yankees better here.
Listen, that's a road to get better. Again, I like the player. I truly do. You know, but back to Volpe for a second. Sal said something like, you know how he's kind of like just lobbing the ball over there. And we know he doesn't have a plus arm. So he's got to be about textbook mechanics, quick release, anticipation, which generally he's been very good at up until this year. I would almost rather see, as much as the throw bothered me yesterday and a few others, the thing that jumps out to me, and I forget what game it was. I think you were on vacation. Actually, you were. But and I said it. I remember when he maybe you didn't. Maybe you guys were even not away, but you know what I mean. When he went down to the one knee and he fielded a routine. I know Yankee fans who saw the game that weren't away. Whatever, went down on one knee on a routine ground ball, and I'm like, man, that is just a young man who's just not sure of what he's supposed to do. I would rather see, you know, a kid with, instead of 50, I'd almost rather have 18 errors, but he's throwing the ball into the stands like a rocket.
Confident,
rather than
firing,
being so tentative, you know, and double pumping. And that's where, again, I would sit him.
He's
I would
thinking,
not send
man.
Him down. Sal would, if you missed the start of the show, free Odyssey app. It's just a difference of opinion, but I get it. This got to be addressed.
The BT and Sal Show on the Fan is presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Mets. And Annabelle is calling from Bridgeport, Connecticut, talking about those Mets. What's up, Annabelle?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
What's up?
Good, good. I got 2 points. One of Wolfie, I'm a Mets fan, but I'm going to bring the Mets fan first. A month ago, I spoke with both of you guys, and I said I wanted Luis Robert Jr., and you guys, you know, didn't agree with me at that point. But right now, it's like you guys are changing your mind, not to disrespect you, but like you'd rather have him than anybody else.
Well, not any. What do you mean anybody else in center field? And by the way, we're allowed to change our mind. Like, to me, the options of Luis Robert are better than what's out there. Now, I'm not giving up a ton to get him, but I would be open to it. Whereas, yes, a month ago or several weeks ago, whatever, I was like, eh, he wouldn't be the difference maker to me. I feel like where the Mets are at, I would take a chance on Luis Robert, especially considering the other options in center field. But if they don't get him, I'm not going to be heartbroken here.
He's also played well. He's also starting to hit, which can change our opinion.
He can get hot now, and with and this ball club, he can get better.
Are you giving up Vientos for him?
Definitely.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's fair enough. You like him.
Decisive. Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
what does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself.
Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
I have another point of Volpe. The situation with, you know, I'm not a Yankee fan, I'm a Mets fan, but what I hear everybody talking about Volpe, I believe with this kid, what he has in his mind is mental. I mean, he's a kid from New Jersey. He got a lot of friends around here, and everything is getting to him. I think this kid will be great someplace else.
Well, they're not going to move on from him yet. I mean, so that's not going to happen. Could you imagine if they trade a Volpe? Let me frame it in the form of a question. Would you be stunned?
Oh, I was going to say I would not be shocked, but yes, I would, because the Yankees just don't operate like that. It's ride it out until the bitter end, like trying to squeeze every last.
That's usually with money.
Yeah. Well, all right, but with Volpe, with
the DJs,
you know Cashman is. Yeah, I think it's more Cashman being thick-headed and him trying to prove a point a lot of these times. Like, we know better than you do. Yeah, maybe money with Hicks or Gallo or LeMahieu or the endless options that's gone on with. I still believe it with Volpe. Dude, they're being thick-headed about it by not sending them down. I'm not even just talking about now. I'm talking about in the years past. Like, they didn't even acknowledge, to your point, any issues. They've never acknowledged any issues. It was always, he's a Gold Glover. Oh, he's great. He'll be fine. Volpe will be fine. He'll be fine. 3 years, and it's progressively gotten worse. Finally, it's like, oh, you know what? We got a problem. We got to fix it. Last night. Oh, you think? It's nice that you'd acknowledge that. So, like, I would think that would be a smart thing to do, try to just move on from somebody who may not be able to make it here. He's got to get away from the noise. I don't think that's that radical, though. Trading him would be radical. They're not going to make something, a decision like that radical. Sending him down, I think, should be on the table, and I think he is on the table.
How do you judge his post-game reactions to these? I watched that last night again.
I still feel like a kid. I feel like I'm watching a kid who's just in his own head, just so hard on himself
and
beating himself up and wearing it.
Yeah.
So you have to.
He's owned it, but he's very.
I know.
You could tell he's almost. I don't want to say overwhelmed, because I don't think he is, but it sometimes comes across that way in the interviews.
I think he has lost all his confidence, and he is doubting himself, and he is thinking out there. And as an athlete, the last thing you could do is think. And he's got to answer these questions. Like, it actually gives me anxiety thinking about what he's going through.
Yeah.
Having to put on the uniform, strap it up, go out there, hear the boos. Like, good God, dude.
His buddies texted him from high school in New Jersey and all his friends and family. It's a lot.
And then the more you probably have people saying, whether it's Booney or his father or whoever, like, hey, it's going to be all right, whatever it may be. Like, there is no good thing to say to somebody who's in that type of rut with this many people talking about it.
Yeah.
And the noise and the spotlight, like, and you could just see him. He's frustrated. He knows he's better than this, but he's lost the confidence, which is why I think the only answer is to send him down and get him mentally right and strong. He doesn't seem strong or confident right now. It's like, oh boy, man, he's been drowning. The Yankees are letting him drown.
You know, the confidence to me is, you talk about the brain and the mind. It's the most powerful tool that we have. I mean, think about this. Like, and we go through this doing our job as well. There's most days you and I are in rhythm. We feel good. The words are firing. We're just banging from topic to top. Boom, 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 boom. And then there's the occasional day where the thoughts aren't connecting to the tongue as freely as they do. And that's a very uncomfortable feeling. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe not quite as detectable to the audience because they're not hanging on every syllable. But trust me, from my seat, I'm sure you go through the same thing once in a while, whether it's here on TV. You know, it's not the A-plus day. And it could, you either flush it and you come back and you do it the next day, or it could get a little bit worse. The difference is, people drop comments on us a lot, but they're not doing radio segments on us having a bad segment. This weight is as heavy for Volpe. I don't know how it could really get heavier. I really don't.
Right. So we got to figure out a way to fix it. And to me, the only way would be to send him down.
All right. I would sit him. I wouldn't do that, but I get it. It's rough in the field.
The White Sox, BT, are not starting Adrian Hauser today. There is no deal in place. I guess there was some thought that maybe he was already traded, but they're not going to start him in anticipating that he might be traded ahead of tomorrow's deadline. That could be a name to watch with the Mets. Obviously, Hauser familiar with Stearns. He brought him in here after you had him in Milwaukee. Traded for him again. I don't know if they go down that road, but I'd keep an eye on that as a potential package with Luis Robert. And then Andy Martino just tweeting out the Yankees' most likely approach, and this is what drives me nuts, Yankees' most likely approach continues to be to improve the roster without selling the farm. I'm not saying you have to sell the farm. What I'm saying, in the case of Stephen Kwan, when a player of that caliber might be available, I don't even know if he's available or not, but his name is being out there in some of the reports.
Prominently, every day.
Like, Heyman linked him to the Mets, which to me would not make any sense. If I'm the Mets, that's not filling a need. Yes, he's a terrific ball player, but giving up what it would take to get him and not having him fill a need does not make any sense.
I disagree. I think that the need that it would fill is you can get Nimmo out of left field, who's not very good, and just let Nimmo DH.
And who's playing center?
You're going to keep McNeil out there.
Yeah, I mean, they need to send him.
Saying for now, but Kwan is an elite defensive player. Yeah. Nimmo's not, so at least Kwan helps out McNeil out there.
I'm not saying he wouldn't be an upgrade over Nimmo. What I'm saying is you're going to have to give up a boatload to get him. Mm-hmm. I'd prefer the Mets give up their boatload in the bullpen or center field. Kwan would be great. Yeah, sure, I'd take
it. But Kwan's better than Robert. A lot better than Robert.
I know, but he's not a center fielder.
I understand that.
But this is where we just fundamentally disagree. You have the Yankees mentality. Wow, he's a good ball player. Yeah, bring him in and figure it out. I'm not moving. And some people have the same thing. Move Nimmo to center field. No, he stinks in center field.
No, I didn't say move Nimmo to center field.
But some people are saying that. Get Kwan and move Nimmo to center. What? Have you watched a game this year? Like, yeah, Nimmo did play center field years ago. He wasn't good then. He was serviceable and better than we thought. He's not a good center fielder, which is why Stearns rightly moved him to left field, and they need a center fielder. It's not, oh, go get Kwan and move Nimmo to center. If anything, you'd be like, maybe play Kwan in center, but again, he's not a center fielder. Like, I want the pieces to fit better, so I'm not opposed to Kwan, but the Yankees don't have a left fielder. Jason Dominguez is not it. He's not a big league left fielder. I'm not saying he can't be a great player one day. He's not right now. They need it, and they don't have a leadoff hitter. The Mets at least have Nimmo leading off. Would I rather have Kwan? Sure. Kwan's a two-time All-Star, Gold Glover. Yes,
young.
But they made their decision with Brandon Nimmo, and they need a center fielder and could use a potential third baseman, second baseman, whatever you want to say, and certainly some more arms. Whereas the Yankees desperately need a leadoff hitter and a guy who is exactly Kwan's skill set. Put the bat on the ball, hit for a high average, leadoff, and play Gold Glove caliber defense.
Well, listen, Sal, ideally you make a trade and the guy that you bring in, you plug right into a position of need rather than having to take a guy that is, or, you know, has got, whatever, 6 years to go on his contract and then put him over here and just this. And I get that. It's a cleaner addition when you're able to do that. But I don't think the Mets are going to get Kwan. Just a thought as to why I think they should at least be on the most cursory level involved with whatever the Guardians might do for him. Like, if you have an outfield of Kwan, of McNeil in center, I know you want center field. I get you. I'm just giving you my thought process. It's something that I would at least entertain. You know, to me now, and then you put Nimmo as the DH, and he's hitting very well, and he's not a good outfielder in terms of an arm,
right.
Even though he's better in left and center, he's still not a very good
outfielder.
Your offense
is better.
Your offense is significantly better.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm not opposed to it. All right, talk me into it. That's fine. And then what do you get? What would the Mets have that would even make Cleveland think? Like,
well, you got two third basemen. Yeah. I mean, give them one of those guys. I'm not saying you give up a pitcher. I wouldn't do that.
I would think that they would want at least Mauricio and then some. Maybe they want Mauricio and Sproat. Like, that I'm talking big boy. Hey, if I'm saying Schlittler
and either Jones
or Dominguez, like the equivalent's got to be Sproat, McClain.
Would you do that?
I would not do it from a Mets perspective.
What if Nimmo was not on the roster and you had a gaping hole at left field and it would be a smoother move?
I think it's a different story. Remember, too, the Mets need pitching. The Yankees don't. Meaning, yes, right now they do, but the Mets need high-end guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not opposed to trading one of those young starters, pick one. Like, they're not all going to pan out the way that you would hope. So whether it's Sproat, McClure, whoever, Tong, like, if Cleveland identifies one of those three and Mauricio, that's a heavy price. Like, I said Mauricio's untouchable the other day, but I'd consider it for a player of Kwan's caliber, certainly.
All right.
You'd have to. And then I'd have to live with, unfortunately, Beatty or Vientos. Now, I'd prefer to give up Vientos, Beatty, Acuna, one of the pitchers.
Before Mauricio.
Yes.
Yeah, and think about what Kwan would do for your lineup. I mean, now you have Nimmo in a different spot, a power source, and
he's
having
behind Alonso.
Yep.
You'd have Kwan leading off. Look, Kwan is better than Robert. He's not a center fielder, so he's not a better fit, but he's better than Robert. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could talk me into that. Now, what I would want in addition, though, is a center fielder. Now, maybe you can't get Robert.
Go get Bader. That's where you get Bader again. Cheap, whatever. Here you go.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
Yes, I just think he's understood.
Okay.
I just think he's a perfect fit for the Yankees. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Rich is calling from Brick, New Jersey. What's up, Rich?
Hey, Rich.
Hey, guys. What's going on today? How are you?
How are you?
Good. What's cooking?
What's cooking is basically after that throw that Volpe made yesterday, which, if you're being fair, Goldschmidt should have dug that out.
Yes.
But,
yep.
It's in his head. Sending them down to the minors. It's not going to do anything except for, you know, maybe adding more angst because he can still get boot down in the minors just as much as he could do at Yankee Stadium. He needs to sit on the bench for about a week or two, watch somebody else play his position, get scared enough so that way he can say, hey, wait, I could be replaced and start working on
it. Yeah, but hold on a second, Rich. His defensive meltdowns, to me, there's no correlation to Anthony Volpe becoming comfortable.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm the shortstop of the Yankees, and I got a gold glove, and I already hit a World Series home run. I'm good. Nobody's taking my... There's no way. Like, if anything, I think he might be working himself too hard. There is such a thing where you do cross that threshold of doing too much, and sometimes you got to save the player, either a physical thing or a mental thing or both. And I think, I know he's putting the work in. I know mentally he's a mess. He's killing himself over this, which is why I would sit him. Now, if you sit him for a week or two, now it's a roster issue. Now you're wasting a roster spot without Aaron Judge. That's problematic. So that's not going to happen. I would say for a day or two, but there's no way any issue that Volpe has is because he's comfortable and he thinks he has arrived. I can promise you that is not it.
Yeah, I think the last thing, to use his words, Rich's words, is that you need to do with Volpe, scare him. Oh, scare him a little bit. No, quite the opposite. Yeah, I'm more worried about
pump
him.
Pump him up a little bit. Hold his hand.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm with you.
I think that they've been trying to do that at the big league level. I just feel like a full reset. Go down, try to clear your head a little bit. You know, the other thing, and I was thinking about this during the break as I was walking to the bathroom, the other thing about sending him down is that, for me, as wise an answer, there's no track record or resume to pull back to say, okay, well, I've been in this funk and I've worked out of it before. I know I could get myself out of it, like an established big leaguer. This is rare here when you're seeing a guy who's had all the expectations and hype that he had in year three, has not lived up to them. The noise has gotten worse. He has gotten worse because of it. And there's no, like, well, he'll be fine. All right, a big leaguer has a bad year or whatever, but he could go back to the success that he had to regain that confidence. He can't do that because he's still questioning himself. You can't have success until you have confidence. But how do you have the confidence to have the success when you never had it before.
And you never had to bounce back from this kind
of
adversity.
That's what I'm saying, at the big league level. I get that. Obviously, he's had success his whole life.
Sure, sure,
absolutely. But now when you get hit with this adversity, like, you got to figure out your way through it. And he's trying at the big league level, and I think he's doubting himself, and there's no track record to be like, well, I've been here before, I'm confident enough to get out of it. I think he's doubting himself.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, listen, I said when Sal was out, I think it very well might come down to this simple thought, this simple concept, very likely just overdrafted. When you look at his arm strength and you look at his size, not that he can't be a good major league player. I still believe, and I'm not just saying that, I believe that he could be. There's a lot of things he does well. But again, if you put him at some tryout and you've got, you know, a couple of 6'3 shortstops hitting bombs with rockets throwing 95 across the diamond, you know, he doesn't have that tool bag. He just doesn't.
And remember, too, how the Yankees brought him here. He was not supposed to be their shortstop.
But he did earn it.
He didn't hit 202. Training.
Well, I get that.
So there was already like a, huh. He wasn't the favorite going into spring training.
No, he wasn't.
Peraza was the favorite going into spring training.
Correct.
Volpe wowed them.
He earned it.
And they made the decision based on spring training. Forget about what they thought going in. Based on what they saw in spring training, they made the decision saying, this kid's the real deal. We believe he's ready. He earned it in spring training. We're going to give him the starting shortstop job.
Mm-hmm.
And they never looked back. And for me, a decision that was made based off of one spring training, because it wasn't the thought process going in. So it was really only that one spring training. That decision should not have been so cemented that you've kept him here with the ups and downs and inconsistencies for 3 years. They could have sent him down in year one. We've had the discussion. They certainly could have sent him down in year two. And now it's gotten worse than it's been at any point before. So there's such a fragile nature to the whole development of Anthony Volpe, and the Yankees have screwed this thing up here. I don't know if they could ever repair it. I don't know if sitting him's the right thing. I don't know if sending him down's the right thing. It may be gone.
It's going to have to be repaired from within. I mean, at this point, you know, it's going to have to be Anthony who's going to rectify this, either rectify it or not. You know, and the way Jeter won the job too, I mean, that's why I'm not getting all the Yankees for promoting him when they did. Derek started in 96, and by the way, he had an over-shoulder of the catch and went yard at Jacobs Field his first game. So he fit right in, obviously. But he didn't play great that spring. He won the job because Tony Fernandez
got hurt.
Broke his arm. Yeah. But that Yankee team, you know, you had Boggs, you had more veterans. And like when Volpe won the job a couple of years ago, the Yankees defensively were a disaster. You know, they won a lot of games, you know, but I don't think they were a particularly good team. So he couldn't really hide. Who was the veteran voice outside of Judge that had any cachet he could lean on? Derek had a better support system.
Right, and Yankees were winning, so they're like, all right, it'll get better. Yep. Don't worry about it. This will be his growing spurts, his learning years, whatever. But now...
No, it's rough.
He was a beast in the ring, too.
Yes, he was.
I know, like, that's not really our wheelhouse, but...
I've seen a lot of stuff after his career. He was an absolute maniac.
Yeah.
I know the faction that he formed, of course. I mean, he was a maniac, that crew.
They have this show... Unreal on Netflix. You have Netflix now, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and you have Peacock as well?
Yeah, get all that stupid stuff.
Yeah, I want to ask him about that. Like, I'd prefer the whole library to be moved to Netflix myself.
Uh-huh.
But whatever. They have this show Unreal on Netflix
now. I haven't seen that yet.
Me neither. I don't even know how I heard about it. But I heard about it, somewhere, maybe on social media. I was like, let me check this out. So I watched last night. Dude, it is, it's unreal. It takes you behind the scenes even further than anything or deeper than anything that you've seen before. So like, you see all the backstage stuff.
Oh, the locker room stuff?
Oh, yeah.
You don't see a lot of locker room stuff in WWE. You see it in baseball. You see it in football. The locker room stuff is kind of rare.
And I guess that's kind of the premise of this show. He's Triple H, obviously prominent in that, but they have like, they did a little, it was CM Punk in there. Cody Rhodes was in there. Rhea Ripley. But either way, it's a fascinating look into what goes into building the show and the mindset and the performance art. So anyway, we talk about that with him. But
A little different, I'm sure, from if they did this show back in the 80s where you had Andre the Giant drinking wine and Dusty Rhodes smoking cigarettes and, you know, who knows what other... I mean, the shenanigans, those guys were just... The locker room back then?
Andre using bathtubs as toilets.
Boots as toilets. They used to, I mean, some of the ribs they used to do on each other was ridiculous.
Well, also like the travel that, just nonstop. It's funny, too, to see the schedule and how they have everything mapped out. And he's done a great job, like, taking the sport or the entertainment of the whatever you want to call it, to a whole nother level. And he even said this himself, like, it's more challenging now, even though it's,
It's less frequent.
Yeah, it seems like that.
It is. No, they used to wrestle 340 times a year back in the day.
But now they have, at the very least, the two live shows every week, right? With Raw on Monday, SmackDown on Friday, then you throw in the pay-per-views and all that stuff. So there are different aspects that have been challenging for it. I'm fascinated by the older stuff. I know you said you go through the rabbit hole.
God, I love that. I could watch it all day.
Now, just the older stuff or any kind of intel or behind the scenes with...
I've watched a lot of the newer stuff. Like, there's some shows on A&E, like Rivals, some other stuff that I've jumped into where... And that's really where, like, you know, I kind of checked out... Right when Shawn Michaels was beginning to ascend. I mean, really not a good time to back it up. I should have stayed for that. But I was just getting older and I was whatever. I was busy. But I really missed a lot of good stuff. I missed The Rock. Like, I didn't really watch The Rock or, you know, The Undertaker's real true rise to prominence. Yeah, no, I enjoy it. I really do.
I like The Undertaker that we saw in the beginning, or at least that I saw. You may have been checking out by that
when he was with Paul Bearer. Yeah, when he first came on.
That, to me, was my favorite Undertaker. I never got into the other stuff of it. Like I said, I've been in and out of it, but I remember Triple H at his peak. But either way, and it's fun now to think about SummerSlam. It'll be here at MetLife, two-night event. So it's the first ever SummerSlam that's going to be a Saturday and Sunday. I don't know if I love, me personally, I don't know if I love the idea of two nights. I get it, because then you have the Friday SmackDown, Saturday, Sunday pay-per-view with SummerSlam, and then the Monday, wrap it up, Monday Night Raw.
So I don't need two nights myself. I mean, listen, there's a demand for it, so they'd be dumb not to do it. If you're going to sell tickets two nights, why not try to maximize the money? I always like those standalone singular events myself. Back in the day.
It just feels like it makes it more special. But think about this, BT, with the rosters that they have. If you can perform and have it for 2 days, and like you said, draw for 2 days as well, why not do it? I mean, they have such a loaded roster with talent, and there's not enough time like to get all these matches in. I think back to the way that it is now, and then I think back, like, man, was it like this back in the day? How many matches did they have?
I got something for you. So if I had to say, Sal, what was the first SummerSlam? Take a guess year-wise. You'll be in the neighborhood.
Yeah, 1988.
Attaboy. All right, boom. So... I got the card for you that night. You want to hear it?
Yeah, the main event, was that the... Wait, hold on. Give me a second here. Yeah, that was the Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks.
There you go. Of course, we know the Mega Powers, Hulk and Randy Savage, the Mega Bucks, Ted DiBiase, Andre the Giant.
Jesse Ventura, special guest referee.
Yes! I'm sure Virgil was hovering around the ring as well. Other matches, this is a good card. Rick Rude versus Junkyard Dog.
It's almost 40 years ago, dude.
Oh, my God. The Powers of Pain versus Nikolai Volkoff and Boris Zukov. And the Ultimate Warrior taking down the Honky Tonk Man for the Intercontinental Strap. I thought... that the Honky Tonk Man, and I still do, was one of the most underrated heels that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah,
and I hated him back then. I thought he was corny, you know, but like with the dancing. But, you know, how many times with that gimmick guitar did he smash somebody over the head? He had a good angle with Elizabeth and Macho Man. Like, the Honky Tonk Man was in the middle, Sal, of a lot of good stuff in the 80s and early 90s.
Can you believe it's been roughly 40 years since that?
Because I can't.
SummerSlam at the time was like that was a new thing.
There was
WrestleMania, of course. I guess it was all kind of new back then, but it was WrestleMania. It was
Survivor Series started.
And then Royal Rumble.
Yes.
And then SummerSlam was like the last one in 88. Coming up on 40 years, and now obviously bigger than ever with the two-night event here. So, yeah, I love the old-school stuff. And even the new stuff, and this is a big deal with John Cena, who's on his retirement tour. So there's all that. It's gonna be a massive crowd.
It's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. The one thing, and I don't know the answer to this. You probably know better than me. Like, one of the things that you would always get back in the day was the live interviews. Like, I'm looking at this from the 88 card, and it was a Brother Love show, a live Brother Love show. I had to dress up as him with Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah.
Do they still do that stuff? I don't think that they do.
Yeah, but I think they do it more. I don't know about specific, like, Piper's Pit or the Brother Love
show. Or the Body Shop or the Flower Shop or Adonis. Right. They don't do that stuff anymore.
It's more now these guys just sometimes get in the ring and just go as opposed to having a specific...
But I like the choreographed nature of the set.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's probably outdated, so that's why they don't do it. But I don't know. I like that.
Well, they do try to bring back a lot of the nostalgia. They did that on the Saturday Night Main Event. We were out there at the Coliseum, but if you watch it on TV, you see like they do the old highlight package, music and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's nice to tie in the nostalgia of it. Of course, you know, Hulk Hogan passing away. Wonder if they're going to be honoring him. They've done the two video tributes on SmackDown and then Raw.
They have to honor him. They will.
I wonder if they're going to do something. At some point, though, you got to move on, no?
If anybody deserves this to be drawn out a bit, it's the man who put this on the mainstream map.
I know, but they did it on SmackDown, they did it on Raw. We're going to do it again. I'm going to ask.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got the 10-bell salute twice.
Yeah. maybe do it at SummerSlam here at MetLife Stadium.
You know what I meant to ask you? And somebody, and I tweeted this the other day, and somebody said that it was actually up there for a minute, then they took it down. Why would Madison Square Garden not retire like Hulk Hogan's whatever?
Did they do that?
No, I think they had it up for a little bit.
And then just took it down?
Yeah, but like you have obviously the Knicks and the Rangers, Billy Joel, you've got Lou Cardasecca. Like to me, Hulk Hogan's got to be up in the rafters.
I thought that it was and just assumed, and I don't know this, that it was taken down because of the, you know, the racist stuff and those issues.
I don't know if that's why it was taken down.
Yeah, now if it is, then you can understand why.
For sure. I don't know. Was that the exact reason why? I don't know when they took it down.
They do have at the Garden as you walk around. I don't know which concourse it is, but they have the Hogan memorabilia.
I've seen like boots and yeah, I've seen that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, obviously, and you see, he was supposed to open up a bar. Down right across the street from the Garden.
I did see that. Yeah, Hulk Hogan with his business part. He's going to go through with it.
He said he's going to go through. It sounds awesome. Like, they're going to have all Hulk memorabilia
there.
Yeah,
I think they're going to have a ring in there.
Really?
I read, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate.
Get you in the ring. Suplex you.
It's unfortunate that Hogan's not going to be around to see that.
Ah, man.
But either way, we're looking forward to talking to Triple H coming up in, which should be momentarily here. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll get back to the sports stuff that I'm still the trip. Oh, there it is.
Yes.
Time to play the game.
All right, here we go, BT. So we've been talking it up just now. The first ever two-night SummerSlam takes place this Saturday and Sunday at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. The event streams live in the U.S. exclusively on Peacock beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and is available internationally on Netflix. This marks WWE's return to MetLife Stadium for the first time since WrestleMania 35 in 2019. And right now, the King of Kings, the man himself, Triple H, joining BT and Sal. How are you, Triple H?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Yeah, not bad. First thing, we're just talking about this, obviously, the passing of Hulk this week. You guys did a lot on SmackDown and then Raw. Do you have any plans to honor Hogan once again at SummerSlam on Saturday or Sunday?
We're working through the show now, and you know, it comes down to finding the right mix of, and I think you just mentioned it a second ago as I was getting mic'd up here, right? Like, what is the right level of respect? Obviously, you cannot tribute enough as his accomplishments in WWE or in wrestling in general, right? I mean, you could make the argument that none of us would be here in this industry without him, right? The rise of Hulk Hogan in the 80s, really catapulting the business to another level. So, you know, but there's not without its controversy. So we want to be aware of that, and we're making those decisions in real time, I think, just like everybody else is.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you this too, and I thought you did a great job with the mic, with the salute to Hulk, and Cody, you know, certainly addressed both angles, the stuff that, you know, obviously got Hulk in trouble, and of course all the amazing stuff that he did. But you grew up in New Hampshire, if I'm not Nashville, right? You're in New. Okay, so
yes.
When you're 13 or 14, that's when Hulk wins the strap from the Sheik. Did you see him? Because I grew up in New York, and I didn't get access to like the AWA or the NWA unless I went down to Florida to visit my relatives in Orlando. Was your first exposure to Hulk when he came to the WWE?
No, my first exposure to Hulk was when he came to WWF the first time. So when he was a heel and Freddie Blassie was his manager, coming in to work with Backlund and to do all that stuff. I remember being, you know, as a kid being like, wow, this guy's incredible and, you know, is going to take this to another level. And then he left. Where I grew up, I was fortunate to get, like, we were one of the places to get cable television as it started to come into all the areas, right? So I would see the AWA, I would see all that, you know, different stuff. As he went down to Florida, occasionally we'd see that. When he was in the AWA working with Vern and Nick Bockwinkel and all of that, I would see it. So when he came in, I was well aware of who and what he was, and what he brought to the table. But the rocket ship that it was in that moment of him coming in, setting the place on fire, and then, you know, beating the Iron Sheik and just starting a run that is really comparable to nothing else. I mean, just taking it to a whole nother level. And then, of course, later, you know, becoming Hollywood Hulk Hogan, and just again, once again, any dip that there was in him transcending the business sort of got recaptivated by that moment with the NWO. So,
yeah.
You know, two completely separate generational runs that really positioned him as not only the biggest star in the industry, but a guy that could transcend outside of that, and you guys know you lived it as well. There was a moment in time in the middle to late 80s where probably Hulk Hogan is probably the most recognizable man on the planet.
Not him, Michael Jackson. He's on the list. There's no doubt. I agree.
Sure.
Yeah, Triple H with his BT and Sound on the Fan. One more Hogan thing. I obviously want to jump around the car, but I'd love your opinion on this, your thoughts on this. So I was actually on the air when we got the news, right? So, you know, no preparation, even though I could talk about Hulk Hogan in my sleep and wrestling. And I eventually got to this point. Like, to me, what Tiger Woods did for golf, like back in the day, you had a bunch of, let's face it, like, you know, just like white guys with bellies wearing khakis and ugly clothes, and they weren't really athletes. Tiger changed everything. Michael Jordan revolutionized the sneaker industry. It's my opinion, Triple H, that there's going to be better wrestlers for sure than Hulk, but nobody can elevate wrestling ever again from the way that where Hulk took it to where he eventually took it. Nobody else could do that. I just think it's actually impossible. You agree?
I do believe that. And I believe it because it was the first, and it caused the explosion, right? It caused it to go to a next level. It caused it to become mainstream where everybody, you know, having lived through that period of time, it's hard for people to understand, but MTV was like the biggest thing in the world, right? Like, that's all anybody watched as a young person. And all of a sudden, here's Hulk Hogan and Cyndi Lauper and, you know, the whole crew doing this thing that becomes the biggest, most talked about thing happening at that time. As a kid, it wasn't, you know, you heard about sports, you heard about big fights, you heard about all those things, but everybody was talking about Hulk Hogan and the Rock and Wrestling Connection and WWF and just all of it. So I don't think you can ever replicate it, because where we are now sort of piggybacks off of that, and that, you know, the giant that was Hulk Hogan then launched the Bret Harts and the Stone Cold Steve Austins and the Rocks, and they continued to grow it, but that first initial leap into the zeitgeist, into popular, everyday, water cooler conversations before the internet was Hulk Hogan.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Triple H ahead of SummerSlam this weekend out of MetLife Stadium. We talked about it before. Why two nights? Like, I kind of understand the business of it. You know, you have Friday SmackDown, Saturday Sunday, and then Monday with Raw. Why, though, two nights? It's the first ever, almost 40 years, first ever SummerSlam two nights. You know that this has been an effective business model so far based off what you've had in WrestleMania. Why the two nights now for these pay-per-views?
Look, it has been successful for us on the WrestleMania side for sure. The two-night WrestleManias, destination weekend for people that can come in. You know, I think people plan their year, their vacation around it. A lot of folks do. They come in, whether they're coming in on the Thursday, they're going to the World, they're seeing all the memorabilia, getting autographs, coming to SmackDown on Friday night, the Saturday-Sunday events, NXT in the afternoon, sometimes on the Saturdays, all the way through to the Monday night. This time we'll be at Barclays Center. It creates a destination event. So if you are a WWE fan, if you're a sports entertainment fan, man, it's the ultimate. You come in, you're there for that whole weekend, and everything you do, everything you see, when we say we come in and we take over, that New York, New Jersey area will just be WWE Central. And if you're a fan, there's nothing like it. It's going to Disney for pro wrestling. And it's worked for us at WrestleMania. It'll work for us at SummerSlam. It's going incredibly well. You know, the business is there, so let's take it.
Yeah, I was watching, I don't know if it was, I watched the first episode of Unreal last night on Netflix, and by the way, it is tremendous. I was telling BT about this. I can't wait to watch the rest of them here at Triple H. Great show that you guys are doing that gives you, I mean, incredible insight to behind the scenes of what goes on. I'm not sure if you said it in this or if I read this somewhere else, but you said that the business right now is more challenging than it's ever been. Explain why that is the case.
Well, I think the internet, the you know, you could do things at that moment in time, when you go back and you talk about Hulk Hogan, right? People didn't know. They didn't know the ins and the outs. They didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. They maybe talked about it a little bit. Now, you know, you can't if you're bringing in a new talent, like, you got to hide him at a different airport. You can't let him be seen at the building, because the second you do, it's everywhere. People want to report on everything. And it's the funny thing that you talk about on Real, like, people that are fans of our business are just as fascinated with the behind the scenes of what we do as they are seeing it take place and the entertainment that it provides in real time. And all the things that goes into it. And there, as you said, with the show, there's so much that goes into the creation of this. But fans are fascinated with it. The people that are complaining about us lifting that curtain and showing people behind the scenes are mostly the people that are already talking about it anyways. They're mm-hmm. on podcasts. They're debating it with their friends. They're already there talking about all of it. We're just giving you a look into what really goes on and what happens behind the scenes. And I think, much like Drive to Survive did for F1, I think this opens up the doors to a lot of people that aren't necessarily fans, but that can watch this and appreciate all that goes into it and say, like, man, these people seem fascinating. They approach what they do with such an incredible passion. I want to see what the final product is that they put out, and hopefully that leads to them becoming WWE fans for life.
You're an artist. You got to put words and sounds together to create an image. So when you struggle to find something creative that you're just not sure if it's going to work, what is your process? What do you do when you just can't nail it behind the scenes with the team?
It's tough. You know, people don't think about it in this manner. We do Raw, SmackDown, NXT every single week, 52 weeks a year. The story never ends, and it leads you to that next PLE. It leads you to that next big event. It's a constantly churning cycle. You cannot name another entertainment source, whether television, scripted or otherwise, music, anything that has that run of consistency. So when there, you're always going to have moments of creative, like you're just dry. You don't have the ideas. What you have is good, but it's not what you want it to be. The beautiful thing is it's a huge team. So anybody that says, oh, well, this one person, the creative goes through them, that, you know, people say that a lot about, it's a massive team. So when I'm dry, hopefully somebody else has a great idea. And you know it when you hear it. So as the ideas come up, they're coming from everywhere, fast and furious, from talent, from our writing team, from our producers, to everywhere. As the ideas are coming in, you know, there's a good one in the bunch. And we're always looking for what the best is. Doesn't matter where it comes from.
Does talent have a lot more say now than they used to back in the day with Vince Sr.?
You know, I think back in the, you said, if you're talking about the Vince Sr. days, right? There was a lot less overall storytelling, right? It was a lot more matches and promotion to get to those matches. So I think talent had input on what they did creatively in ring. Where the end result was up to the promotion and up to Vince Sr.
Yep.
Vince Jr., it went all over the place from his idea to do it this way to the right talent having a lot of creative input. I like to work directly with talent. And Vince did as well. Don't get me wrong. That was his strong suit. I worked with him for many, many years. It's how we created a creative partnership. But I love to work with talent. I love to hear their point of view. They know their characters. Let's get all those points of view together and then determine the best route for it, right? And as long as everybody is open to, hey, we want to do this, but that might not be the best idea on the table. Somebody might have something better. I don't care whose idea it is, where it comes from. Let's take it and run with it. If we can make fans happy, or make them intrigued, or sometimes make them mad at what we're doing. That's what it's all about. Silence is the enemy. Loud reactions is where we're at. So it doesn't matter where the idea comes from. We'll run with it.
Last one for you, Triple H, and we appreciate your time. I'm not sure if you're a Mets fan or not, or I know you guys have done a lot of work with baseball and football, all the leagues. Have you seen Brandon Nimmo for the Mets? He warms up in the on-deck circle with a sledgehammer. And I don't know about you, but I see a sledgehammer and I think one thing. Triple H, King of Kings, have you seen this? Any advice for Brandon Nimmo and the Mets how to use that sledgehammer properly?
I'm just saying the rules are slightly different in Major League Baseball. I would advise don't hit the ref with the umpire with it. Don't go after other people and whack them with it. It might be seen differently. In our industry, that stuff is is celebrated. Maybe not so much in Major League Baseball. But, like honestly, what's the difference? For years, I don't know, when I was a kid, I assume they still do put weights on the bat when you're in the on-deck circle. To warm you up and all that. What's the difference? Sledgehammer worked for me. I think it could work for him, and it's a good gimmick.
You know, I didn't think about it, but I'm sure you could maybe want to use that on some of the umpires, the way they've been officiating these games. Triple H, we appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you at some point soon. Good luck with SummerSlam this weekend.
Appreciate you guys. Hopefully we'll see you there.
Thanks, man. You got it.
First ever two-night SummerSlam takes place this Saturday, MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. It streams live exclusively on Peacock at 6 p.m., available internationally on Netflix. And you can catch Unreal as well. I told you, BT, it was great last night. You'll love it.
I would have jumped into it.
Even with the current superstars, if you don't know as much about Rhea Ripley, but just to get an insight for them. Dude, CM Punk talks about performance anxiety.
He does, huh?
We didn't have time to get into it with Triple H. Obviously, we only had a few minutes there, but yeah.
Is that when Triple H was talking him up?
Yeah,
trying to get his confidence back up I saw something with Punk that was floating around.
Yeah, that might have been it. I forget exactly. I was watching it late last night. I had the Met game on as well, but I was checking it out, and CM Punk, who's like a big performer and badass and talking about like confident, one of the best in the world, whatever, he's like, man, I get performance anxiety, and the only time I'm comfortable is when the red light goes on and I'm in the ring. And yeah, there are scenes with him and Triple H behind the scenes. Either way, even if you're not familiar with the current wrestlers, it is a fantastic show, so check it out. Unreal, that's on Netflix there. And actually, Omaha Films does the producing there, which they do a great job.
Manny's, huh?
Yeah.
Look at these guys. I saw his name, Peyton Manning. I mean, just come on, lay out for somebody else, will you?